Back to you, Corey, for virtual machines.
How's everyone doing after that last one? Pretty good? We're getting into a little bit more exciting stuff now. We're going to take a look at Windows Azure Virtual Machines, and this is actually a really interesting offer. Because basically, a lot of people from the start, you know, when we brought out cloud services in the past, they were like, well, what about the workloads that I need that need persistent storage underneath it? And this is our answer to it. Basically, we're providing a great set of tooling around virtual machines. So basically, what we're looking to offer is a continuous offering between the private cloud, which is your internal infrastructure, and the public cloud, which is infrastructure as a service sitting in Windows Azure. So basically, what we're looking here is we want to support the key applications that are running in your servers today, along the lines of SQL Server, maybe SharePoint, if you're doing SharePoint today. But we're looking to make it easier for you to just push those pieces of your internal infrastructure into the cloud and allow you to be able to do so, because that wasn't offered in the past. So a little bit about IaaS workloads. It's all about the applications. So like I said, we want to bring your line of business apps into a nice persistent storage, bring them out of your data centers if they need to be, and get them into the cloud. We're also looking at different sorts of infrastructure that you may have. If you want to have a nice distributed area for your source control system, maybe you want to stand up TFS in the cloud, it gives you the ability to do so. You also have the ability to set up the database, SQL Server, and basically that's one of our one of the demos today is how to show, you know, how to get Windows Server provisioned straight out of our gallery. So we actually provide it as a nice simple way to get right out and running with SQL Server in the cloud. Basically, we're looking at, you know, all of the different things that are going to bring you back up and running into things that you do today into the cloud, and also connecting hybrid applications through the virtual network offerings that are kind of interjoined with the virtual machines. So this will allow you to do things like setting up a hardware VPN on your internal site and connecting those applications or applications that you have running in the cloud to databases sitting on premise. The image is available at the preview time frame, which is right now. They're up and running. We have Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2008 R2 with SQL Server 2012. And that's the nice offering that we have that basically has everything up and running for you straight through the gallery, as well as a preview or release candidate version of SQL Server 2012. So you can stand that up, see what the next version's like, or you know, as soon as it's ready to go live, stand up some Windows Server 2012 instances and see how your applications migrate to them. Because it's all about standing things up quickly, understanding how you're going to leverage the tools that you have at hand, and then bringing them back down if they don't quite suit your needs, or keeping the infrastructure up there and just providing it at a really rapid pace. On the Linux side of things, we provide four different operating systems. We have OpenSUSE, we have SUSE Enterprise Edition, so if you want to step up to the enterprise level. We also have Ubuntu, which is a very common Linux distribution, and CentOS, which is, you know, right up there with the top listing as well. But we're providing all of these things through partners, so they have, you know, we have people that are professionals that are running Linux on a regular basis, providing these images for us to make it easier to offset the load and just get Linux up and running in the cloud. So we'll just switch over to a quick demo here. And we'll just take a look at how we can get up and running with virtual machines in Windows Azure. So we're just going to hit new. We're going to hit virtual machine. We'll create one from the gallery, and we'll just quickly go over here straight into the SQL Server image that we have and click on next. So basically, this provides us a nice little interface to go through and start setting up a virtual machine instance. We want you to be able to provide the names that you want for your machines. So you'll be able to set up every part of the step all around, And this is funny because we now offer MySQL support, so the typical MySQL doesn't really work. So I'm going to say my initial SQL demo. Provide a password, and then we're going to create this here. We have two options here at the top. We have a standalone virtual machine, and we have the ability to connect to an existing virtual machine. And a little bit later on, I'll show you what the underlying infrastructure is below the virtual machines. But right now, we'll just click through the standalone virtual machine, and we'll just bring this online. It was CF demo. We can provision that to an already created storage account or create a new one. And then we can just select the region that we want as well. So we'll say East US. Availability sets we'll get into a little bit later on, so we'll just pass right over that. And basically, this is going to go out and it's going to stand up that image sitting in the background and start setting up our SQL Server instance under the covers as well as it starts to spin up and go. While we let that spin up, just kind of take a quick look out back at the slides, because it'll take a few minutes. But basically, you know, we're trying to get you started and think about things in a different way. So we provide the management portal. I mentioned earlier there's PowerShell, so you can script out your environments, and you can do this today. Virtual machines are an added set to the PowerShell commandlets. You also have the RESTful APIs that we provide to all of our services. So if you, you know, if you're using a language that we currently don't support, or you want to create your own management tasks, maybe a way of providing multiple steps in a single script, you could fire requests right against the RESTful API and get things up and running quickly. We also support obviously we talked about the two operating systems, but Linux VMs and Windows VMs support the existing stack, the full range of sizes from extra small all the way up to extra large, and it all depends on the workload that you're trying to pull through. So essentially, you're looking at what your application is going to consume, what kind of I/O you need coming out of your VM. So if you're looking for a SQL instance, you might want to scale it up to a little bit larger instance for the extra throughput, or alternatively, you know, the extra storage that you're going to need underneath to hold all that data from your application. And then basically, we're running a lot of this stuff off of the existing infrastructure, so the disk that you're saving, all of these images are getting pushed out and stored within Windows Azure Storage. So you can go out and you can take a look using your favorite storage tool. I use Cloudberry myself, but there's Cerebrod tools. There's a couple other third-party vendors that are providing great tooling to actually browse through your Windows Azure Storage. It's taken just a little bit longer than expected, but we'll slip back in here. And I'll show you maybe one that I've provisioned already. So we do have the ability to actually go through and RDP directly into the Windows version of the VM. So let's just take a quick look at this. Make sure you accept all the security certificates coming through. But as you can see, we're booted nicely into a Windows Server 2012 image. If we look at Windows Explorer here, we can see that we do have a number of disks sitting here. Let's just full screen that. We'll just zoom in a little bit. I can't zoom in, sitting on the server. But basically, the operating system sitting on C, as it does today. And one other thing is there's a temporary storage, which is the D drive. Thing to note about the D drive is it's actually the only drive that isn't persistent. So if you're looking to store, you know, website files or images that people upload, you probably don't want to put it into D, because whenever your role recycles or your VM gets moved over to a different slot within Windows Azure, that stuff's actually just going to disappear. So the reason it's there is that D drive is actually the underlying hard drive sitting in the VM within Windows Azure. So it's the, if you think of how cloud services, if you're used to that, it would basically be that local storage disk that would just clear itself out every time something moved off. If you're not used to that yet, you'll probably end up in a scenario where you'll find that out later on because of the cloud services didn't have that persisted layer. We just kind of threw out whatever was in that storage drive. And it still happens today, but we've provided the ability to add in different storage on top of that. So to look at that, we can actually, at the bottom of the screen here, see an attach button. And what this will do is allow us to attach an empty disk. So we can actually say, you know, how big of a disk do we need? We'll provide a terabyte drive for us. And basically, this is going to go out, create a new page blob in storage, allow us to save files out. And basically, when we jump back into our VM here, hopefully it creates this relatively quickly, we'll actually be able to see this drive come online. We might have to go into the server manager here and actually give it a drive letter. So if we look at Tools, storage. Oops. System. Those were the days when you could just click on, right click on computer and select the manage tab. Excuse me for a second. There we go. Disks. And once we actually have our storage, there we go. There's our 1 terabyte drive sitting at the bottom there. And we can just right-click on here, initialize that new drive. It's going to go through, format it all. And we can actually go and create a new volume on top of it. And basically, this will step us through actually creating a drive letter for it and everything. I'm just going to skip right over that because we'll have another instance sitting in the background to switch over to later. So that gets us up and running. Let's just switch back to our slides. So as you see, we just created something very simple, and we use a gallery sitting in the portal, but we do actually allow you to bring your own server or bring your own VHD. And there's a couple of ways to do this. You can provide it as either an image, and an image needs to be sysprepped. So does anyone know what sysprep is? A few people? So basically what sysprep is going to do is it's going to go out and it's going to generalize your disk. So it's going to take all the computer names, strip that off, and just give it a very base, very friendly way to import that into Hyper-V or into Windows Azure and provide that or provide a way to inject new system names in to bring your image online. So you could do that, or if you just want to go ahead and provision everything, like I said earlier, we give you the ability in the portal to name all your VMs which you want them to be named. So it makes sense for us to allow you to provide VHDs with the names that you would like. And we'll you can just provide a nice disk, just upload it with CS Upload, which is a command line tool that's part of the Windows Azure tools. And basically what this will do is upload everything as is, and you'll be able to run a single instance of that disk using whatever workload that you have sitting on it. So it just basically goes through a simple process of creating that VHD, uploading the VHD that uses the CS Upload tool that's going directly into blob storage. And then you can create that as a disk or image like I described earlier. which just gives you the means to bring, like, that's how it separates them in the portal. So when you go and you click up that gallery, you'll have the ability to select, you know, that nice repeatable image that you've provided, or you can just bring up that one instance of the fully provisioned installed disk that's ready to go. So doing things from the cloud, we basically provide you a base VHD from a standardized portal that, or sorry, a standardized storage account that we have set up. We just kind of push that into your Windows Azure storage account. We start booting that disk up. We allow you to do any kind of customization. Then we actually go through, if you do a capture within the portal, we go through and rerun that sysprep operation, generalizes the disk for you. We create that capture, and it gets stored out into your storage account as an image. Then we delete that existing disk that you've brought up, just so you know you don't need that version anymore, now that you have the generalized version that you can use as a repeatable disk sitting within the cloud. And then you have the ability to go out and start spinning up instances. We also wanted to provide the means for you to go out and bring the images that you have sitting on-prem. But we want to look at the inverse of that and actually bringing something that you might have provisioned in the cloud and bring it back into your infrastructure, just in case, you know, business is a little bit slower and you don't need to burst out to the cloud anymore. You can bring that workload back into your existing infrastructure, run it in-house for a little bit, and then when things pick back up again, you can burst back out to the cloud. And essentially, because everything's sitting in blob storage, all you're doing is a simple download operation against that VHD that's sitting out there, and you're bringing it directly into Hyper-V and just spinning things back up from there. So looking at persistent disks, James explained earlier on how you have that one primary image and then the backup duplicate images sitting in there. So all of your virtual machines are backed up by default, which is great, because the last thing you want to do is lose one of your instances that's sitting out there. And then for disaster recovery, you can keep that geo-replication enabled. And what that's going to do is push it over to another data center within a different region and keep those duplicates kind of sitting there. So the one caveat to this is you do actually end up paying for the storage to keep that replica out there. So if that's, you know, if cost is a big thing for you, just turn off geo-replication, and you'll have the three versions that are sitting within your one data center. But basically, that gives you the nice, easy, and flexible way of making sure that it's out there. However, this doesn't take away the need for you to keep backups on site. So this could provide a nice way for you to keep your images backed up in the cloud, but you do want to make sure, just in case something were to happen, to one of your replicas sitting in within Windows Azure, that you have something backed up on premise, just so you know not everything's at a loss. So this shows that you know, if the virtual machine becomes unstable, it's going to switch over to a new VM. It's just going to switch over to a new VM sitting in that cluster, and it's still actually pointing to the same disk sitting in storage that it was using previously. It just failed that one instance down. Windows Azure Fabric Controller has brought it over, powered it up on a new box, and just basically pushed the load over to the new server. Looking a little bit at the virtual machine sizes and storage, you have the range of extra small all the way to extra large. You want to make sure that you're taking advantage of the CPUs you use. So if you're using something like the parallel libraries in .NET, you're going to want to skip all the way up to a medium instance, because you're not going to get any advantage just running everything on a single core, right? You're parallelizing it out to multiple processors. You need those multiple processors in order to actually get the advantage. So if you're looking at, you know, heavy workloads, spinning up to a medium instance is going to give you the ability to move out to multiple cores. Coming all the way up to an extra large, you're giving yourself the ability to attach 16 terabytes of data in data disks to your VM, as well as providing, you know, additional bandwidth and memory on top of the 8 cores that the extra large is going to provide you. So looking at disks and images, essentially a lot of the base OS images we have for Microsoft partners are providing them to us. We manage the set of virtual machines that we're running, like the Windows Server ones. But basically, we've gone out and already created the images and syspressed them all for your use. And then you just go and on top of that, providing any additional data disks that you want. One thing to keep in mind about OS images versus disks is you don't really want any data sitting on your OS images. So if you're deploying applications, good practice is to spin up a data disk and have your application pushed out onto that data disk, and then just change the default configs in IIS to look to that data disk for your website instead of sitting it in the inet pub folder. The reasoning for this being is you basically have that persistent disk sitting out there, and the last thing you want to do is have an operating or like some invalid patch of your OS or some third-party tool that you're using make your website inaccessible, right? Because if you do find something like you've gone and you run Windows Update and it broke your app, you could potentially have a VM sitting spun up already. All you need to do is detach the disk from the existing role, attach the data disk over to your newly provisioned VM that you had sitting in as an image that you've set up from your original install of your application, and now you have your workload back online. I thought we already got started with VMs. So let's just take a little look into cloud services and the underlying pinnings of how the VMs work. Essentially, everything's sitting within its own cloud service. So there's an implicit cloud service wrapped around your VM, and basically the images are just loaded up on top of that. To date, this is how the cloud services work. You have a web and a worker role, and those web and worker roles are, the web roles where you deploy your web code, worker roles where you might do any back-end kind of things that you need to scale out the tasks and make sure that your web front end is at minimal load. And basically, all this is nicely wrapped within a cloud service today. So we thought, how do we switch this model over to persistent VMs? And missed a few points here. We have the two roles, and then you spin up multiple instances in there. We thought about how do we spin this out into how virtual machines run, and you notice that we have that implicit cloud service sitting around it, and that basically stays invisible to you until you spin up another virtual machine. Once you spin up that second virtual machine, it's now going to show in the portal, and essentially this overall cloud service is now hosting all of those VMs. So if you think about it, it's almost like we're running two web roles within the cloud service, which those web roles are really just the images that you've provided us. And essentially, what that is what that allows us to do is keep a very consistent model with what we had previously, but provide the functionality on top of it, which is the nice virtual machine environment, which you can attach disks to. So let's take a little look into virtual networking. Essentially, because these cloud services are running within the same because these virtual machines are running within the same cloud service, we now have the functionality of input endpoints that basically allow those two virtual machines to communicate using internal DNS. So because you have the full control over the machine name, you can actually provide you can actually provide the machine name to connect to an instance as long as it's within the same virtual machine cloud service. So one of the possible scenarios there is if you stand up a VM that has SQL Server running on it, you can essentially just use the named connection to that SQL Server instead of providing the database.windows.net URL like you would for Windows Azure SQL Database. Or alternatively, you can just use the IP address and you'll actually get connectivity to that, that SQL instance within the VM. You do have the ability to bring your own DNS, and there's multiple ways you can do that. You can basically use the on-prem DNS server that you spun up in-house. You can use third-party DNS servers. So if you want to use, you know, someone like a company that has race car drivers as their spokespersons, you can use something like along those lines. Or you can stand up a DNS server within Windows Azure. There's basically endless possibilities for you there. Just, you know, trying to use the existing infrastructure that you have or moving towards newer things. Some of the protocol support that we have, if you knew Windows Azure previously, there's no ability for UDP traffic. We've now enabled UDP, so you now have a nice networking stack to do connectivity on. Does anyone create games for a living? You have the coolest job ever. But now you have the ability just to provide that really fast UDP transactions that you're looking for in something like a game or maybe a heartbeat towards your application that's running that you need to guarantee is online. You can also set up port forwarding. So if you want to make sure that your traffic coming into your site is routed off of the default ports, essentially we provide an area within the portal for you to set up a public endpoint and an internal endpoint. And basically that allows you to provide the traffic through on a nice safe port that's not going to get scanned, but still redirect it to the port that it's expecting within your infrastructure. A little bit on how that works. So if you wanted to keep, if you wanted to keep traffic, and this is obviously for remote desktop, if you wanted to keep traffic going to separate VMs, you could set up an external port that's going to map to your first VM. In the example here, it's 5586, and that's going to point to VM1, but that still pulls through that 3389 port that RDP is looking for within the VM. Then you set up another endpoint that has the public that has a public address of 5587. That's pointing to the second VM in the background, but still provides the known port for RDP. You can also load balance sets. So you have the ability in the portal to create a website, create a virtual machine, and then attach another virtual machine to the existing VM. And what that does is just starts loading in the multiple virtual machines within that one cloud service. And then you can turn on load balancing. So basically, you set up the public endpoint. In this scenario, it's port 80. And then for every additional VM within that, you can basically set up just a load balance traffic that's going to go through port 80 as well. So what you'll see is you'll have multiple servers sitting in the background, but all of a sudden your users are going to get switched over between the different VMs that are sitting up and running in your environment. You can also set up custom probes, and this is the kind of scenario where you're doing some sort of health check. And basically, this will allow you to set up different access points sitting behind the firewall that your instances are going to go out, and on a regular basis, it's going to ping to figure out which VMs are up and running. And you can set that up through the portal as well as to where that endpoint is actually supposed to be. So talk a little bit about the service level agreement. For multiple role instances, we basically have the same as today with cloud services, the 99.95% monthly SLA. For single role instances, because we have virtual machines now, there might not be a need for the scalability, so you have a single role instance SLA of 99.9. We had to bring that down a little bit because there are a couple more things that could go wrong when running a single instance. We don't have the ability to just fail over to another instance that's live, right? You only have one there. Our fabric controller has to go out, spin up a brand new VM environment, and move it over. And so there's a couple things that are included within that SLA, like the hardware and the disks. having an entire data center fail on you, and then any kind of hardware or software upgrades within Windows Azure. Things that aren't included, if you have third-party software that you're setting up within your VM and it causes some sort of failure, or you know, you're doing an update to your operating system, so you're running like Windows updates and something goes wrong and it shuts off your VM, because you are on the machine and we're not quite sure what you're doing in there, basically it can't really be included in the SLA because we're not quite sure what's going on. Fault and update domains. Fault domains are basically where you can find a single point of failure. So just imagine a data center, and I'm just going to picture this row here. Every single row heading backwards is another set of servers. So a single row is a single point of failure, right? So if this row were to get up and go for lunch, we no longer have them available. And if your application was sitting within that row, it's not there anymore. What are we going to do? So within the fault domains, we make sure that, you know, if it's a switch sitting up on top of that rack of servers, we want to make sure that we have something sitting off on another fault domain. So if something were to happen to that switch, we move things over to a separate area that shouldn't be offline, and we provide that ability to continue in a nice streamlined fashion. This is something that's kind of pulled over from cloud services. Basically, by default, you have 5 different fault servers or fault domains, and we try and move things across that scale as much as we possibly can. For upgrade domains are how we roll out updates to cloud services in the past. So basically, any time you either spin up or down the number of instances you have, because those are split across multiple update domains, if you have 15 instances, and let's say that's sitting on these 5 rows of people here, we only will shut down this one row of your application before we move on to the next. So we always guarantee that there's other update domains that are sitting there serving up your website while we take down your instances that are getting updated with the newest bits. And basically, the Fabric controller has the ability to spread all of this workload wherever it needs to within the data center to ensure that there's always you always have the upgrade and fault domains that you need. So we never really want to be at a point where, you know, your app has the potential to fail. So just going through the scenario, we have 2 racks. We have the instances sitting there. They're sitting on separate fault domains. We want to make sure that, they're sitting within the fault domains, and then within those fault domains, there's the upgrade domains. So you can see that we have an upgrade domain on separate fault domains. So we know that if your instance was in the middle of upgrading and that rack were to go down, that we still have another upgrade domain sitting elsewhere that's serving up your website at that point in time. Availability sets within within virtual machines is you can basically set up these availability sets that basically state, you know, we need to make sure that these servers stay online. So I'm going to set up these different VMs within an availability set. That availability set will be spread across those fault domains just to make sure that we always have one of those servers up and running for your application. And basically, that sits in the same kind of scenario. We have them on the separate fault domains. They're sitting in the upgrade domains. There's not really an upgrade domain in this case because it's the VMs, so it's whatever you provision. And essentially, that gives you access to having your virtual machines being available whenever you need to, simply because they are sitting on the separate fault domains and our load balancer won't allow them to go down at the same time. So just a kind of roll up of the SLA, we have our single instance sitting out there with a 99.9%. We have a SQL instance, and then we have our application sitting within an availability set. On the other side, we'll always have one of those virtual machines up and running. So if the primary were to fail, it's going to switch over to the secondary, and so on. So for end-to-end availability, you basically want to enable, For end-to-end availability, you basically want to increase the redundancy of your servers just to make sure that they're up and running. So what you can do is you can enable, if you need to have those availability sets, is enable SQL mirroring to make sure that your data is getting synchronized across those fault domains. Because the last thing you want to do is, you know, switch over to that fault, but then not have the data sitting there that needs to be there. So basically, we have someone coming through the load balancer. We have an availability set for our IIS application. And that's because we have the two, we have the ability to make sure that they don't go down. Oops, getting all clicky now. And then when we go over and move that load over to the SQL, we want to make sure that that secondary set is not going to be missing the information that it needs when your web role is trying to connect to your primary, your SQL box there. So just a little bit of a demo on availability sets and load balancing. So I basically set up two VMs sitting behind, well, I set it up earlier. We got a little bit of a pre-baked app, but instead of spinning everything up in front of you, it makes it a lot easier to have some of this stuff up and running. So here's the endpoints tab, and basically we can see by default that remote desktop setup. But because we're going to want to access some information sitting on this application, basically what we're going to do is add an endpoint. So I have a website sitting up and running. I lied. It's the IIS start screen. But essentially, because we can load balance this traffic, what I've done is I've gone in and modified the IIS start screen to say LBVM1 and LBVM2, so we can actually see the traffic getting bounced back and forth between the instances. So what we'll do is we'll add in web. It's a TCP connection. We're going to bring it through on port 80 in both the public and private ports. So it's just going to come through as if it normally would. Right? And we're setting up the load balance demo 1 box right now. So this is going to go out, and it's going to create that endpoint within within our Windows Azure load balancer. One thing to note is you will actually have to go through and enable port 80 on the firewall in the box if you if you haven't done so already. And then essentially what we'll do, we'll just let that spin up, but we'll go over to our load balance demo number 2 box, look at our endpoints, and once we have our secondary endpoint set up, I just want to make sure that this goes through. It's still spinning away. So what we're going to do in a second here is we're going to go into our LB demo 2, and we're going to go through this, a similar workflow, but there's another option that's going to enable us to use that same port that we opened up in the load balancer, but add it to our existing VM sitting behind the firewall. So what this is going to do is, we saw the picture earlier, is there's going to be one point of entry, but then it can basically go out to as many VMs as we possibly need to. And it typically takes a couple seconds, up to a minute, so it shouldn't be too long. Just spin up a little Linux VM, make sure it's not enterprise. So just set up a Linux VM in the meantime, and I'll show you how to connect Linux to the same availability set as well. So username, super user, password. I just saw it pop up in the back there. Linux demo 1. So we just keep this in a common storage location, and we'll just keep going in the East US. Next. So now we see that our web has the TCP port 80. We'll go into LB demo 2. We'll go into endpoints, and we'll go to add endpoint. Now, we picked add endpoint, the radio button option earlier, but now that we have two VMs sitting within the same virtual network, we can essentially just add a load balance traffic endpoint, and we'll just go to web 80. So this adds, basically, this provides a nice, easy way to step through and create additional load balanced VMs sitting in the back end. We'll just keep this as web. You might have noticed that I could change the private endpoint. So if we had the same website set up on different host headers and I changed the port on all my different VMs, I have the ability to route it to the proper website from the load balancer. And basically, this is going to spin up and provide us that other port 80. So what I'll do is I'll just go over here, see if we can get LB demo 1. LB demo 1 actually has LB demo 2 up in the corner there. We'll go to LB demo 2. See if our website web endpoint got created there. Go back to the dashboard. So you can see now that we're going through the same address here at the top, LB demo 1. But if I refresh, and let's try and do this live here, you can see that it's load balancing between the two separate instances. So basically what I did in those pre-made VMs is I set up just a Windows Server 2012 endpoint, opened up port 80, and then when I created them, added them to the same availability set, and that provided us the ability to go and host up a load balanced port 80 endpoint between the two VMs. So just jump back to the slides here. So basically, some of the additional functionalities that Windows Azure Virtual Networks allow is the cross-connectivity between the on-premise and the cloud, and this is done through a VPN gateway. In the past, how many people were familiar with Azure in the past, again? There's just a few of you. How many people, keep your hands up if you remember Windows Azure Connect? Yeah, a couple? So Windows Azure Connect was like an IPsec-based configuration which allowed you to install a little piece of client application on all of your servers that you wanted to expose to the cloud. And that was a pretty decent scenario if you wanted to just have a couple servers sitting online. But if you want to actually open up to a broader spectrum of machines sitting on your infrastructure, the last thing you want to do is have to install that on every single machine. So what we look to do is provided a nice VPN support, and this is provided going through an actual piece of VPN hardware. You can also set up you could set up a hardware appliance or VPN software, which allows you to push out and straight into Windows Azure. And this is basically done by going through and setting up some of the VPN tools that we have sitting within our infrastructure. You can also export a file from a number of the different devices that we support, and you can actually import that directly into Windows Azure. So the problem with traveling on the road is I can't actually bring this stuff to you, but if you look at the Learn Windows Azure website, we'll be providing some of the demos that Mark Rusinovich did, and he actually connected to a VPN device, so you can go out to Channel 9 and look for Learn Windows Azure. So basically, this enables a branch office scenario. You have all your data centers sitting behind you. You set up that hardware VPN, configure it within Windows Azure, and basically that exposes two-way, one towards Windows Azure, and then also Windows Azure Connect locally, and actually consume some of the stuff that's sitting within your infrastructure. So hopefully this provides a great way to either enable scenarios where you might need multiple networks running simultaneously. So you have a couple different NICs sitting within your SQL Server boxes sitting on-premise. You now have the ability to expose all of those different gateways into that data to the cloud application. Does your app need a virtual network? If you need something that has a persistent IP address, obviously static IPs aren't available within Windows Azure. So if you lease out a static IP through your service provider, that will give you the ability to connect down to that, that on-prem device that has the static IP. If you require burst ability into the cloud, you can stand up a number of web servers sitting in Windows Azure. It's really easy to get them out there and push them up. But you require, you know, data sitting in your infrastructure because you either work with healthcare or your government, and that data needs to maintain a relative security or has to have a number of different I'm thinking PCI, like auditing and certifications behind the infrastructure that it's sitting on. And then, you know, you might need connectivity between Active Directory and the sites that you have. So if you want to expose your on-prem Active Directory instead of pushing up into the cloud or hosting it within Windows Azure, you can do that as well. And then there's also a scenario where you can connect out Windows Azure virtual machines and Windows Azure cloud services. Now, to date, as you saw in a lot of the last slides earlier, we only showed virtual machines sitting in a single cloud service, and we showed web and worker sitting in a cloud service. And that's because you can't today pair up a cloud service and a VM within the same space. So that's something that we're looking to provide in the future. However, it's not here today. So there's scenarios on how you can get around that. Mostly is to do with connecting connecting your VMs and your cloud services within a virtual network within Windows Azure. And basically, that will allow you to expose like full SQL Server stack against your cloud service roles, which was a common scenario that a lot of people needed. So the benefits to using platform as a service, because that's still Microsoft's vision of the future, is everyone's going to have the ability to scale up these massive systems sitting, you know, on stateless VMs and basically providing a nice, easy experience to have your application fail over into allow your application to fail over and no one really notice. So essentially, keeping everything nice and fast and making sure that your application's always up and running for your clients. PaaS is also cheaper because you're cutting down on the management costs. So you have a number of people working today trying to keep your systems patched up. That's something that PaaS provides for you. So if you think about how Windows Update runs every second Tuesday of the month, Microsoft goes out, creates a new guest image for that, and that gets automatically provisioned out to your cloud service roles, unless, of course, you want to opt out of that. The cool thing about that is now your IT pros are no longer looking at patching the machines and all that, and they're actually thinking about the harder things, like how do we make sure our application is available for the years to come of our our business plan. How do we make sure that we're going to be reaching out to that bigger and bigger audience every year? Platform as a service is also lower risk because you have the ability to fail over and you're creating applications in a way that you don't have to worry so much about failure. I don't know if you've seen the Netflix blog post, but they actually created this thing called Chaos Monkey. And what Chaos Monkey goes and does is it randomly will pull down one of their web instances. And they use that as a tool to learn how to fail and how to recover quickly. And this is something that, you know, Microsoft sees as a definite advantage, is making sure that you're adapting to change, you're adapting to failure, and you're not thinking, you don't have to think about it. It just, your servers will automatically provision when needed. And that's the advantage of PaaS. So connecting PaaS and IaaS side by side, like I mentioned earlier, obviously you might need to leverage a little bit more of the SQL Server stack than the Windows Azure SQL database offers today. Things like invisible row or transparent row encryption, and some of the extra data types that aren't supported. So running these two things side by side is definitely something we see you doing in the future. Basically connecting between the two, we have obviously the load balancer out front, bringing the traffic in. Your application's going to connect through an internal endpoint to your virtual machine. I'm starting to get really dry up here. Basically, you'll have the ability to make sure that that traffic's going to get routed to your SQL Server instance from your cloud service, and make sure that you maintain that ability to fail over and address some of the issues that we've experienced, like you've experienced in the past. Some of the weaknesses is obviously there's going to be some additional latency connecting outside of the, if you think, connecting outside of your application and heading over to the SQL VM, there might be network traffic sitting within the data center. So that might cause an issue. It's a little bit less secure because you're poking additional holes in the firewall that might not necessarily need to be there in order to enable this kind of scenario. And it does kind of bring the management and deployment overhead up a little bit, because now you have to manage your application and this VM that's sitting out there that your application's connecting to in order to get all the information coming out of that virtual machine. Connecting with a virtual network, it's a little bit more secure because you're adding a layer of networking that's sitting behind the firewall. It's a little bit lower latency because it's not making that trip outside. It's essentially just connecting through some of the infrastructure that we have running within our data centers today. And it basically makes a little bit of an easier way of connecting between cloud services and virtual machines based on all of the different networking stacks that had available. So you can take advantage of TCP connections straight through instead of getting routed out through HTTP to hit your database that's not sitting within the virtual network. Some of the weaknesses, the complexity of actually setting up a VNet, like a virtual network within Windows Azure, and then there's no Windows Azure provided DNS. If you needed a static IP address, you basically have to make sure that you have the ability to ensure the networks can the IP addresses can change sitting in the back end of things. Just to kind of recap, Windows Azure Virtual Machines, we wanted to support the key applications that you're running within your infrastructure today, things like SharePoint, SQL Server, which I spent a lot of time focused on, and other applications like CRM that you might be using within your infrastructure today. We want to provide a nice set of features with a nice listing of guest operating systems. Providing support for Linux through our partners is a very interesting thing. And we wanted to make sure that you can connect to your cloud service applications that you might already have deployed today and enable those additional scenarios that you may have needed in the past. And with that, I'd like to thank you for coming out today.